Hello, hello, hello. So I finally did it. I finally went into Camberley and got a tattoo. My wife said I wouldn't dare. My wife said you wouldn't be able to do it. You wouldn't be able to cope with the pain. But I said, no, I'm going to do it. I've always wanted to have a tattoo. I've always wanted to have one. I'm finally now's the time. So I went into Camberley and I went there originally with thinking of just getting one tattoo, but I ended up getting four, and I'm very, very, very pleased with them. This one is a shamrock, and it's because my great-grandmother was Irish, and I've always kind of identified with the Irish. I always find them, you know, they're unpretentious, and they're honest, they're fun, like me, I'm quite fun. And so, and also, my great-grandmother was Irish. She was from County Meath, so it's kind of part of my blood. It's kind of part of who I am. I always feel that there's Irishness in my veins at the end of the day, and so that's why I wanted to make, you know, to identify myself as Irish and to make it clear that I am Irish. And so therefore, well, kind of, I'm a bit Irish. So I decided to have a shamrock tattooed on my face. But then I thought, well, while I'm here, I may as well carry on. So I've got two children. And so, of course, I love them. And they're a big part of who I am. Our family are very close. We're a very close family, very close-knit family. And so I decided that I wanted to express my love for them and how important they are to my life and to me on my face. And so I've got two children. My son is called Harry. We didn't want people to say it's actually legally Harry. It's not Henry, because we thought Henry, you know, it's a bit pretentious. It's a bit kind of snobby, a bit kind of upper class. So we didn't want to go for Henry, but we liked Harry. So the legal name is Harry. And so I decided to get, look, an H here on my cheek here. But it's kind of an old-fashioned H, because we're quite interested in genealogy and we're facing the family tree. And so I wanted, I like history, you know, at the end. History is very, I like reading a good history book. And so I thought I'd get an old-fashioned script, you see, with the H there, kind of a bit like Henry VIII. So that's what I decided to do. And then my daughter's actually called Tiger Sky. We really like the name Tiger Sky because we wanted the name to be a bit unique. Yeah, we thought it's important. We wanted a bit of a unique name. We didn't want her to have the same kind of name that everybody else has, all the other children, Olivia or whatever. So we went for Tiger Sky. It's a unique name. It's a kind of a gift for her, really, to have a name as unique as that. So, of course, I went for a tiger. Look here, I've got a tiger on my chin. And over here on my cheek, some sky. And I'm very, very, as I say, I'm very, very pleased with it because I mean, I think they're quite aesthetically pleasing. I mean, they look quite good. And also, it's a way of being, I suppose, being a bit unique, really. I suppose being a bit unusual. A way of sort of saying who I am and making it clear to people, you know, this is who I am. This is who I am. Take me or leave me. This is who I am. If you don't like it, off you go, you know. And hopefully you'll find something you do like. But I wanted to do it. It was a way of just saying who I am, of being unique and kind of expressing myself and expressing how I feel and expressing a great deal about my personality, my life history theory and what's going on in contemporary society today. Why, oh why, oh by the way, hello, hello, hello in normal persona, why, oh why do so many people have tattoos? Where has this come from? In the 1980s, when I was a boy, very few people had tattoos. It was basically sort of working class stroke underclass people. They might occasionally, and it was only occasionally, have tattoos. And so there was something quite useful about them, because at that time, if somebody had a tattoo, it was quite clear, look, you probably better stay away from them unless you want your face kicked in. I mean, that was tattoos, or it was quite clear that the woman, if she had a tattoo at that time, was a woman basically of loose morals. I was at school with a girl, she was from a single parent family, and her mother had a tattoo of true love and her name, and then true love and her brother's name on. So, and she was an absolute tart. And it was very, very rare to find men with tattoos. So those kinds of people had tattoos, and then it was people who were in, I don't know, heavy metal bands, Iron Maiden, that sort of thing. You know, they might have tattoos, men, on their arms. But it was very, very rare. Now, by the 2000s, the early 2000s, when I was at university, this had increased. It had increased. There were a few people, more people among the less educated, among those of low socioeconomic status, who had tattoos. And I started wondering what was going on. Why was there this change? At university, there were a few people that were very, very sort of out there and aggressive and those kinds of people that had tattoos. And then there was a Norwegian girl that I went out with, and she had a small tattoo of a pagan symbol or a dragon or something on her shoulder. But we put that down to the fact that she was foreign and therefore eccentric and weird. But among British people, there were, at the university, which was almost everybody, there were very few people that had tattoos. By the mid-2000s, when I was doing my doctorate, then it had grown a bit more, and you started to see more people who were relatively sort of middle class, as it were, relatively high socioeconomic background, having tattoos. And by then you had people like David Beckham and so on, who were very, very famous, who had tattoos. And so it seemed, as a kind of trickle effect, it seemed to have moved from certain wealthy, though perhaps working class background people who had tattoos. And it started spreading and trickling down the society. And now we get to a point where tattoos are everywhere. A few years ago, I was teaching at the University of Oulu, and I asked about this. I asked, you know, do any of you have tattoos? A class of about 30 people. And I estimated that about 25%, I think it was about 25% of people in that class had tattoos. And these were reasonably intelligent young people. It just goes up and up and up. I mean, there's data on this that at the moment in 2015, 1/5 of people in the UK had tattoos. It was 30% of those aged between 25 and 39. So it was fairly congruous with what I was finding. Among those that were born between 1982 and 1984, in 2004, it was 47%. And you have all of these people, so it's bordering on the majority of people who are relatively young who have tattoos, and probably it will soon be the majority of people who are under 30 or whatever who have tattoos. You have all of these people, these pop singers and whatever, that have tattoos. Justin Bieber, Rihanna has loads of tattoos. Ed Sheeran can hardly be regarded as from a sort of working class background. You know, he's quite a middle class, respectable kind of a guy. He has 60 tattoos. So it's not just that the extent of having tattoos has increased, it's the number of them. People are being inked, as I believe the term is, all over their bodies. So what is going on? What is it about people? Why do people have tattoos? This was something that one of my chatters and one of my commenters on YouTube asked me about, and it got me thinking, why is it that people have tattoos? And I actually look at this in my book, How to Judge People by What They Look Like. And so I want to explore this now, the data on what you can tell about somebody from what they look like in terms of having tattoos. Now, there was a study by Tate and Shelton, and they found that there was a clear dimension to people that have tattoos. People that have tattoos have a need for uniqueness. It's a very specific trait. They have a need to be unique. It's an aspect of openness, this one of the big five personality traits. They have a need to be unique, a need to be different, a need basically to not conform, a need to be, you know, unique, right? Secondly, it was found that they were lower, these are really small effect sizes, but people with tattoos are lower in agreeableness. Now, agreeableness is a matter of, it's basically reducible to altruism. So people who have tattoos are lower in altruism. They are less nice. They are less kind than people who, on average, who don't have tattoos. They were also lower in what's called conscientiousness. I had to say impulse control and rule following. And so this is clear that would fit with being unique. You don't want to conform. You don't want to clearly be part of the dominant group. You want to be a bit different. So that was that. And there was another study, a much better study, because it had 8,000 participants. By Haywood and colleagues, and they found that people that have tattoos are more likely to take serious risks. So they are perhaps higher in extroversion and more outgoing, because extroversion predicts taking serious risks. But they're also, in general, they are people that almost, you know, don't care about their own safety. They're just prepared to go for it. They are prepared to live fast and die young. Now, this actually would be something you'd predict, because, of course, this association that, with me anyway, goes back to the 80s of people who are of low socioeconomic status, and who are therefore, we know that socioeconomic status correlates with personality type, and people that have low socioeconomic status tend to be lower in agreeableness and lower in conscientiousness and more prone to take risks. And they tended to have tattoos. And so it makes sense that even though tattoos have spread, among those that have tattoos, you would expect them to be, you know, more likely to have this kind of personality. If you were to use a university student sample, and a lot of these samples are university students, then kind of controlling for intelligence, as you basically have done, then you would expect to find this. And this is exactly what you find. And so it seems to me that And that ultimately these things, low conscientiousness, low agreeableness, a desire to take risks, and a desire to be unique, what these ultimately scream at you is fast life history strategy. As we have discussed in other videos, you have a fast and a slow life history strategy in an unstable yet relatively easy ecology. This selects for a fast life history strategy. You can be wiped out at any moment, so you live fast and die young, and you need to have children quickly, and so you invest all of your energies in sex and copulation and having lots of kids, and to the extent that you select at all, you need to conspicuously advertise your genetic qualities. How do you do this? Large secondary sexual characteristics, that kind of thing. That's how you advertise your genetic qualities, and so you end up with a certain physical look associated with a fast life history strategy and a certain personality, because there's little development of personality. You could live fast and die young, and it doesn't select for things like impulse control or agreeableness or bonding or anything like that. So that's why you get this kind of personality in these unstable ecologies. And being working class, being poor, can be regarded as an unstable ecology. And there's good evidence that someone called Daniel Nettle has researched this, that working class people do indeed follow a faster life history strategy. They live fast, die young. They invest more in sex. They have less stable sexual partnerships. They have more sex. They have more likely to divorce. They're more likely to not get married at all. They're more likely to have illegitimate children. They're more likely to abandon their children, all this kind of thing. And so therefore, if they are fast life history strategists. As you get to the carrying capacity for the species, then the people in the species start to compete against each other, the ecology becomes stable yet predictable. Now that, of course, means that there is a payoff for investment, and if you simply live fast and die young and have lots of children, the stable, predictable yet harsh ecology will mean that they could all just die, and so consequently you have to slow down. You have to make sure you are adapted to the ecology. So you invest less energy in sex and copulation and more energy in nurture and in looking after a smaller number of offspring with a smaller number of wives. And this selects for people that are going to bond, people that are going to create tightly structured groups, people that are going to cooperate with each other. And so it moves energy away from investing in sex and investing in secondary sexual characteristics to advertise your genetic quality quickly to investing in the mind, to investing in agreeableness, therefore you can nurture the children better, you're a kinder person, conscientiousness, you're rule following, you take fewer risks, you're a kinder person, you look after them more, and in groups, and in being part of a group, because they're more likely to survive if you're part of a group in a harsh ecology, and therefore in a lack of uniqueness. So these are the fundamental differences, you see. And you can see that the tattoo can be understood as part of a fast life history strategy. Now, how is that the case? Well, first of all, with a tattoo, you're expressing your uniqueness. You're expressing the fact that you're different. You're expressing the fact that you're out there. You're unique. And so this is a fast life history strategy thing, because slow life history strategists will tend to subsume themselves into the group. They'll have a low sense of uniqueness. So therefore, you can see why they'd be disinclined to get tattoos, because it would make them stand out, it would make them conspicuous, it would make them different. And that's the last thing that people that are slow life history strategists want. Secondly, it indicates physical qualities. Remember, if you're a fast life history strategist, you're selecting for it's basically an unstable ecology. How do you survive in an unstable ecology? You've got to be big and tough and aggressive. Well, you're expressing the fact that you can endure pain. It's moderately painful to get tattoos, and so you're expressing the fact that you can endure pain. Thirdly, it can be regarded as a sort of a costly signal of your genetic quality. So there's a degree to which, if you look what I've done to my face, there's a degree to which you're scarring yourself. You're making yourself look a bit like you're diseased. You're making yourself look like there's something wrong with your skin. But in doing so, you're saying, well, look, even though I've done this to myself, still I'm attractive. Even though I've got this handicap, I'm still attractive. And so it's a little bit like a peacock's tail. The peacock's tail is a handicap. It slows it down. It can't run as fast. It can't escape prey as easily. So it's therefore saying to the peahen, look, even though I've got this handicap, I'm still around. I'm still here. I haven't been killed. So what genetic quality I must have? Think think how I'd be like if I didn't have this tail, but I do have this tail. So it's a costly signal. And of course, they select for big tails. The bigger the tail, the better, because the bigger the tail is and he's survived long enough to try to breed, shows you the better genetic quality he is. A peacock with lots of mutant genes with poor genetic quality would invest proportionately more in fighting off disease or whatever, and he'd only be able to produce a smaller, less colourful, whatever, tail. So they select for these big tails, and the tail is a costly signal of the bigger the tail, the better, of the higher genetic quality of the peacock. Well, it's a bit like that with tattoos. It's saying, well, look at my face, or, you know, look at my art, whatever. Look at me. I've got this handicap, this physical handicap, but still I'm doing well. It can also be seen as a handicap on a sociological level. There's a degree to which it's sticking two fingers up at society. It's saying, look, I don't care. I'm going to make myself look like aggressive or weird or unusual or strange or nonconformist. I'm going to scream at you that I'm a nonconformist. I mean, more broadly, I'm part of a conformist kind of a craze of lots of people getting tattoos. But I'm going to scream at you with my individual tattoos that I'm a nonconformist. But still, I've managed to get a job. Still, I've managed to earn money. Still, I managed to, you know, come up to you and chat you up in a bar and buy you a drink. So it's saying that despite my handicap, my sociological handicap, as it might be, of having a tattoo on my face, I'm nevertheless doing okay in life. So again, it's a costly signal of the qualities, in this case the physical and psychological qualities perhaps, of the person that has the tattoo. Despite the fact that they're expressing their non-conformism, they're still able to get along in society. Another interesting aspect of these tattoos is when people get them, people tend to get them, originally they did, before it became a craze, when they were quite young. I know a woman here where I live in Oulu who, she's a perfectly reasonable woman actually, but when she was 18, she was going to get a tattoo. And there were quite a few people like that. At university, I remember a few girls, they'd get tattoos, but it was a bit cowardly. They'd get them in places they could cover up. You know, so their mum wouldn't find out, like on their bottoms or on their ankles or whatever, you know, so they could kind of cover it up. A bit pathetic, really. But of course, it's a way of rebelling. And one of the things that's interesting in terms of the development of personality is that as you get older from childhood, your level of conscientiousness and agreeableness both increase. You become more agreeable and more conscientious as you get older. And then there's this dip in late adolescence, in about the age of 17, 18, there's this dip where you become less conscientious and less agreeable before going up and continuing your upward trajectory for the rest of your life. Now that's very interesting that this dip exists, of course, anthropologically. It fits with the time that you have to make the break with your family. It fits with the time that they would have wanted young men to be very, very physically fit and going out and fighting for the tribe. It fits perhaps with a time where you can be very creative and artistic and do interesting things, might be of use to the tribe. So you can perhaps speculate on why there is that dip. But of course, it's perhaps in that dip, in that period, that a lot of people therefore, because having low agreeableness and low conscientiousness is congruent with having a stronger self-concept, having a stronger sense of self, a stronger sense of uniqueness, being less conformist, and therefore with having a tattoo. And so you can see why tattoos are attractive to people at that specific time. But as I say, in general, it can be seen as a costly signal, both of the endurance of physical pain, of the scarring of your body, and of this sociological possibility that you're still able to be successful despite doing this to yourself. Now, there's an extent to which that's not always the case. In tribes where tattoos are normative and you do get body scarring, for example, in various tribes in Sudan, then it's not sort of expressing your uniqueness at all. It's expressing your conformity to the tribe. It's expressing the fact that you are normal. It's expressing the fact that you have perhaps high conscientiousness and high agreeableness because everybody does this. And so therefore, you know, it would be interesting. It would be by not doing it, you're being unique and you're being different and you're not conforming and you're being interesting and you're in fact perhaps upsetting people. But that's, and so, and you have this scarration as a female, particularly in these tribes, in order to mark you as part of that tribe, in order to make it clear that's who you are. It's more likely perhaps to get you killed if you're tattooed as being part of a particular tribe, because you can't hide it. You can't take it off. You can't hide it. And this would be why once you get into a subculture like a gang, then in prison or whatever, then tattoos become quite popular as a marker of commitment, as a signal that you are part of that gang. It's part of your identity. It's part of who you are. And there's no getting away from it. And so actually within that context, in a broader societal context, of course, you're saying you're a nonconformist and you're in a gang. But in within that gang, it's saying I'm committed to the gang to the extent that I'm marking it on my body and there's no getting away from it. And therefore, I'm saying that I'm prepared to die for the gang if necessary. So it's a commitment marker within that sociological context. In much the same way that some tattoos within certain subcultures, so it's a commitment to a subculture. If you get a football tattoo or whatever, then but more broadly, it relates to uniqueness. But also, of course, it relates, therefore, to these slow and fast life history strategies. Now, with fast life history strategy, what's fast life history strategy about? Well, in part, it's about sex, it's about copulation, it's about advertising genetic quality, it's about advertising your body. And this is Congress with where people tend to get tattoos. So in general, men will tend to get that they want to advertise that they're tough and they're, you know, muscular and all this. And so they tend to get tattoos on their arms in order to draw attention to their muscular arms, draw in sexual selection terms, to draw attention to the fact that they are a kind of alpha male who'll protect you and look after you and who's tough. And in an unstable ecology, of course, you're not particularly interested in a man who can maybe earn a great deal of money or have high socioeconomic status or whatever, because remember, you can be wiped out at any moment. What's more important in a very unstable ecology is a person is tough and big and muscular and he can look after you and he can successfully hunt. And so, therefore, that's where men who have tattoos will tend to get them. With women, they will tend to get them in places that are sexual. They want to advertise their sexuality, their womanness, their womanly charms. They want to entice you. They want to seduce you sexually. And so, therefore, they'll tend to get them on the back of the neck, thus directing you down to the sexual parts of the body. You see some women that will get tattoos here on top of the breast, thus directing you down to the breasts, and, you know, therefore drawing attention to their breasts and their breast quality, and thus their genetic quality, because the secondary sexual characteristics are examples, you know, having attractive secondary sexual characteristics, evidence having good genes and therefore make you attractive. And so they draw attention to the breasts, they draw attention to the body. And of course, most famously, the slag tag, as it's known in English, or I believe in American English, the tramp stamp, where you have a tattoo just above the buttocks, therefore drawing attention to another sexual part of the body, to the buttocks, which are a secondary sexual characteristic in women, which is highly sexual, which are, of course, associated with the vagina and with having sex from behind and so on. And so women will tend to have tattoos in places that draw attention to their secondary sexual characteristics and draw attention to their genetic quality from the male's perspective in that way. If you look at what they have tattoos of, this is again quite interesting. So men, it's again this R strategy stuff. They tend to have tattoos of things like skulls, the gang they're in, such as the football team, nationalism as a kind of a masculine thing. You see here with the Irish flag or the Irish shamrock or whatever. And with women, it tends to be in my own personal observation, it's things like plants, flowers, nice animals, basically sort of pagan fertility symbols. It's trying to say, it's unconsciously saying fertility, our strategy, fertility, lots of children, lots of, you know, fertility, something, you know, that's what it's kind of trying to say to you. I also occasionally have noticed childlike images. I had a student that had a picture of Little Mai from, an image of Little Mai from the Moomins on her leg. So it was a way of drawing attention to how nice her legs were, but also making you think of childishness, making you think basically of young youth fertility. Also Chinese symbols, exoticness, paganness, fertility. That seems to be how they work. Now, there was research into how men react to this, and they react to this in the appropriate way. So there was research by a group led by someone called Guiguin, and he found that men assume that women who have tattoos are more promiscuous, more likely to have more sex. There was research by a team led by Noel Sielski, and he found, it was a large sample of students, that women who have tattoos are indeed more promiscuous. They have sex with more men. They are more promiscuous. So men are right to think this. They are indicating they are our strategists. They are our strategists. And men correctly interpret that they are our strategists. So there is an extent to which these tattoos are a way of expressing your our strategy. They are a way of expressing the strategy you go for to other R strategists, and thus perhaps more successfully achieving that strategy. So this is the essence then of tattoos. People who have tattoos are, compared to those who don't have tattoos, in the context of countries where it's not normative to have tattoos, they are relative R strategists. They are lower in agreeableness, they are lower in conscientiousness, and they are presumably lower, not in neuroticism, but they are lower in, they are aspects of this, such as uniqueness or whatever it may be. They are R strategists. And now, as the tattoo spreads in popularity, of course, it's less clear, you can less easily say, oh God, this person's an R strategist, I'll leave them alone. Because once you get to a point where 47% of relatively young people have tattoos, then, well, it's much more difficult than it used to be to make a judgment based, judge people what they look like, based on their tattoos. But you can still say a person who has a tattoo is more likely to be an R strategist. Now, in terms of understanding how this has spread sociologically, we need to realise that there have always been tattoo crazes. Not always, but I mean, for a long time there have been tattoo crazes. And people have had tattoos. I mean, sailors, for example, back in the days of pirates on the high seas, would tend to have tattoos because they're unstable ecology. You can see how it's attractive, a part of a gang, whatever. But there have been these crazes in the past. Though, interestingly, the famous people that have had tattoos have tended to be, by all accounts, R strategists. So Winston Churchill's mother, she was a definite R strategist. I mean, she had lots of affairs and so on. And as I explore in my book, which you should have presumably got copies of by now, Churchill's headmaster. She had lots of affairs, and it may even be that Churchill's brother, Jack, was only his half-brother, and there's quite good evidence of that. She had a tattoo of a snake around her wrist. Churchill himself had a tattoo of and he was definitely an R strategist, as I explore in my book. He had a tattoo of an anchor. And there's a very interesting book by David McComb, 100 Years of Tattoos, that explores this. Theodore Roosevelt had his family crest on his chest. Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, has some kind of raven or something tattooed onto himself. John Wilkes Booth, as actors tend to be narcissists, had his initials tattooed onto his arm, or his hand, I think it was. King Harold, who was King of England, of course, at a time before William the Conqueror, at a time when it was a highly R strategist society, had a tattoo of his girlfriend's name, Edith, tattooed over his heart. Andrew Jackson, the warlike president, had a tomahawk tattooed on himself. So there's been these periods where people have where tattoos are fashionable and tattoos are not fashionable. But those who tend to get tattoos tend to be the more R strategist types in general. So what we'd expect to happen with the current craze is it may well die out. It may well be that it gets to a point where it goes out of fashion. Although one thing I would note about that is that it's interesting that it's gone so far. I don't think we've ever been in a situation before where half of the English population have tattoos, which is the case among the young, half the population. Now, why has it spread so much? That's an interesting point. I would suggest that it is because the various structures of society which promote K strategy, which promote you feeling that you're part of a group, which promote you feeling a sense of low self-esteem, a weak self-concept, a sense of conformity, all these kinds of things, have been gradually undermined. And they've been particularly undermined in the last generation or so. So the influence of the church, what the church or religion historically does, is it promotes positive and negative ethnocentrism, as I've looked at elsewhere. In other words, it promotes being part of a tightly structured group. It promotes subsuming the self into the group. It promotes low self-esteem. It promotes a low, weak sense of self. It promotes humility. It promotes these values that create a more ethnocentric society that survives in the battle of group selection. Now, religiousness, in that sense, has been very strongly undermined in the last generation. The education system, historically, was about inculcating children, again, with the values to a great extent of religiousness. And it would do this by, to a degree, breaking children's sense of self-esteem. As I again look at in my book, in the public school system and the prep school system, which was then imitated by the state schools, children would be beaten and severely punished for the slightest thing and would be absolutely made to conform and have this sense of the importance of the group and that they as an individual weren't particularly important. And this whole aspect of education has been completely undermined now. Children take over the schools, parents. I mean, in Finland, you can't. There's no discipline in schools here. Even compared to England, there's no discipline. Not only can they not hit children, of course, that's been banned for a long time. That can't even happen at home. And at school, they don't even shout at them. They can't even touch them. They can't even do anything. Children run riot. I heard a case of a child that said to the deputy headmaster at my daughter's school, "I'm going to kill you." Deputy headmaster could do nothing. He could do nothing. So there's nothing to break their spirit, to break their arrogance, to break their high self-concept. And so you can see why this would result in a growing sort of narcissism, in a growing sense of uniqueness, in a growing R strategy, really, because what K strategy, remember, is structured. It's highly structured, yet harsh. It's predictable, yet harsh. Whereas we're taking away the harsh element with this, and also there's a degree to which we've taken away the predictable element, the church rituals, things that are predictable. You know, they've kind of gone, and so you can see why this would perhaps elevate a feeling of uniqueness, a feeling that people were unique and important, and therefore a desire to express themselves and stand out and have tattoos. Although, if it carries on increasing, you'd expect to get to, I imagine, a kind of tipping point where it's no longer unique to have a tattoo. Once the majority have them, it isn't. And therefore, you express your uniqueness by not having one. And therefore, then people will start to remove their tattoos and so on. So there may be a cycle of tattoos, and it may be that this is more sociological and more short-term. I don't know. But I think it's a very interesting question. Is the rise in tattoos an expression of a fundamental change in society because it's gone so far, or is it just part of the cycle of having tattoos and not having tattoos that we've always had? But anyway, I was asked, why did the tattoo craze come from? And I thought about it, and I think this is a big part of what's going on. Okay, well, I hope this has been of interest, and if you want to read more about it, the issues I've raised here, you can please feel free to get my book, How to Judge People by What They Look Like, or my book, Churchill's Headmaster, The Sadist Who Nearly Saved the British Empire. And if you have any questions, do get in touch with me with the comments. I'm always happy to correspond with people. And thank you so much for those of you that have been funding me through Subscribestar. Can I say thank you to you? They weren't emailing me about the new subscribers, so I didn't even know about it. But thank you very much to all those who've done that. Thank you very much to those who've been subscribed, who've been patronizing me through Patreon. It really is very useful. It helps me make more videos. Thank you so much to those who've done that. If you would look really nice, you can patronize me on Patreon, on Subscribestar. You can PayPal me. And of course, you can buy my books. But anyway, please do get in touch. And I hope this is a bit of interest. And, you know, if you're feeling unique, then maybe go out and get a tattoo. Maybe I should get a tattoo of the Jolly Heretic across my forehead. I don't know. What do people think? Should I get a tattoo of the Jolly Heretic and of John Rogers burning at the stake? Maybe I should. I'll have to think about it. So let me know. Whether you think I should go for that. And I hope this is a bit of interest, and I will see you soon. And goodbye. And, you know, be unique.